Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good.
Welcome to If Nothing Changes, Nothing Changes, Life Coaching with Deidre. I'm Deidre, your host, coming to you live on Inner Light Radio, broadcasting straight out of Richmond, California. Now, I know you could have listened to any of the thousands of podcasts on the radio, internet, or even satellite. So let me start off first for thanking you for picking mine. I am an organic therapist, personal mental trainer, self-esteem booster, good-hearted devil's advocate, relationship guru, archaeologist of the soul, and a boss, all rolled up into one, here to give you my perspective on life by guiding, deepening, and challenging your thoughts while influencing you with innovative, insightful information, not forgetting to motivate, provoke, and influence your actions while empowering, educating, and entertaining you. My show will be talking about life, dreams, relationships, love, happiness, health, wealth, fitness, careers, family, and everything else that goes along with all of that. Today, I am continuing our talk about how parents are worrying about their children's future and their family's financial future. This sense of economic tension is not about being below a certain number of dollars in the wallet or bank. It's a generalized feeling of anxiety around financial stability. It's not just those who have low incomes, but even parents with relatively moderate incomes are feeling anxious. In my work with families living in turbulent communities where boom and bust economies are the norm, children are likely to experience their parents and caregivers as often stressed and unavailable emotionally. Working multiple part-time jobs or endlessly anxious when one will be laid off is not good for a parent's mental health or ability to respond to a child's needs. It's even worse if they're at home unemployed and emotionally burnt out. Then on the other hand, some parents are stuck in a financial rut, unable to move ahead with one's career and uncertain about when or even if they are going to realize a few personal goals, like maybe a bigger home, an overdue car upgrade, or just a very needed special vacation. Data shows that more and more people have given up vacations and simple pleasures to make ends meet in this Trump economy. Families have been forced to reduce their spending on non-essential activities like shopping, outings, and vacations. This, on top of wealth inequality, wage stagnation, an unending war, ruptures in trade, and political polarization, is giving parents financial anxiety. The current economic climate deeply affects the way working parents feel about their ability to raise their families, with deep-seated impacts on their relationships, productivity, and confidence. So the best advice for our parents is to learn essential money concepts so they are better equipped to face these financial challenges. And they are finding out that the more they learn, the better they are prepared when money comes up in family conversations in the home. When you're educated, made some changes, and start implementing better money habits, parents can talk calmly about financial matters and avoid having arguments about money, especially in front of the kids. So as usual, we have the best financial educator in the Bay with us, Kendra Willis. This queen wants every family to have access to financial knowledge, products, and resources to prepare for a better future. She has what it takes to empower parents with tools they need to help their families have better financial futures. Welcome, Kendra. How you doing, queen?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me again, Coach D.
You know, this is really a continuation a little bit, you know, for those that follow us all the time, of especially my parent groups, of some questions that they have had that they just really want your expectations expertise on, you know, giving them a little bit more detail or sometimes just your own personal spin is what they love to hear. So we're going to dig right in here, Queen, and we're going to start talking about, you know, how parents, should they adjust their investment approach, right, because of inflation? Because we know that inflation ain't going away.
Right. Absolutely. Well, the short answer is this. Inflation means your dollars today won't stretch as far tomorrow. So your investment strategy, it has to keep pace. You have to have an investment approach that keeps pace with inflation. You know, as a mom, when I had small kids, I always told them, because I like for my kids to know what's going on. I always like for my kids to understand money. And now they're adults. I still have those conversations and I tell them this. I always think of it like grocery shopping. The same $200 cart from 5 years ago is now $350, $450, right? So if your money isn't growing, then we're falling behind. You can't buy what you bought for $200 5 years ago. So if you only saved $200 in your regular bank account 5 years ago, you don't have a whole lot of money, being that most bank accounts are going to give you less than 1% interest. So you have to adjust your investment approach to what's happening in the world, to the fact that the cost of living is rising. Inflation really is a thing. So what should people consider if that's the case, right? If I'm changing my investment approach, what should I be doing? You want to start looking for diversified growth. You want to mix assets so you're not relying on one source. A lot of people will put their money or all their eggs in one basket. You need more than one source. You need more than your regular checking and savings account. And then you can't just rely on cash because inflation eats away at cash. So you want to be looking for growth assets that's going to help you outpace inflation. You want to look for tax advantage accounts. You'll hear a lot of people talking about things like Roth IRAs, HSA accounts, properly structured life insurance accounts like index universal accounts. Those types of things can help your money to grow without worrying about that tax drag. And then you want to just start looking for inflation resistant tools, again, like those index linked products, certain annuities, equities, all those things have historically outpaced inflation throughout the years. And then I also tell my clients, my own children, my friends, people that are not my clients and they work with another advisor somewhere, you want to continuously review your plan at least once a year. I recommend looking at your financial strategy quarterly, but at the very bare bones minimum, you want to look at your plan annually, because inflation changes. And as inflation changes, your strategy should too.
Now, can inflation affect our retirement decisions, or should it? I guess I should say.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because inflation is one of the biggest retirement disruptors. So if you are building your retirement plan strictly based off of yesterday's dollars or today's cost of living, you're in trouble. Because think about it. In our lifetime, since we've been working, we've watched the cost of living. The cost of living has tripled, quadrupled. Me and you talk all the time about like our first apartments and, you know, how much things used to cost back then. They don't cost the same now. So you have to think about higher cost of living. Your retirement income must stretch 20 to 30 years. If you retire at 65 and you plan to live until age 85 or 90, where does that other 20, 25 years worth of money come from? Your retirement money is supposed to be your passive money. So you have to actively grow that money so that one day you can passively collect that money. You got to think about healthcare inflation. Medical costs rise faster than normal inflation. People don't even talk about that. Unless you have lifetime medical benefits, you've got to plan for the fact that there may come a time when you may have some ailments, and maybe you don't have ailments. You just need to see the doctor once a year for your annual checkup. But even in that, how much is that going to cost 5, 10, 20 years from now? You got to adjust your withdrawal strategy. You may need more income later in life, not less income. A lot of people think when they retire, they're going to need less income. That's not always the case, because what if you retire and you're ill when you retire? Then you need more income. And then you want to think about guaranteed income tools. Think about, again, those products that we talked about, those fixed indexed annuities. Those are good tools to help you not outlive your money. I just did a presentation last Monday where we specifically talked about fixed indexed annuities and how you can use those to create predictable lifetime income that isn't tied to market volatility. So you want to start thinking now about, what am I going to do? How am I going to account for that higher cost of living? How am I going to account for healthcare inflation? What is my withdrawal strategy going to look like? And what type of tools and products and strategies and solutions can I start looking at now to put my money in, right? Where can I put my money where I know it's going to be guaranteed to grow? And I know that when it grows, it'll grow in a manner that I won't outlive it. That's the goal. You don't want to live too long and don't have any money. So can inflation affect retirement decisions? Yes, it needs to affect your retirement decisions. And it's up to you to start thinking about that now. The sooner you think about it, the sooner you start planning for it, the better off you'll be. So I want parents to recognize that you can't just be planning for your kids' future. You can borrow money for their college education, but what you're not going to be able to do is borrow money for your retirement. So inflation means we got to start planning for those rising costs. We can't be worried about today's costs. We got to be thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow, and we need to start putting a plan in place so that we can make tomorrow better for ourselves. We want to have a brighter future. We don't want to be old and poor. We want to be older and able to sustain our cost of living, whatever that looks like.
I got a text that came in, Kendra. I got a question. It says, if I'm going to retire in under 3 years, should I adjust how much I put into my 401? Should I pay more or should I just pay less? You know, with knowing that retirement is literally right around the corner, under 3 years.
If retirement is under 3 years, then you need to sit down and find out exactly what you have now, what you're on track to have in 3 years, how much you're going to actually need, you know, 3 years and beyond from now. And then you need to adjust accordingly. If you're not putting in enough into that retirement account, and the 401k is your only account, then you may need to put in more, and you may need to take a look and see if there are other accounts that you should be putting your money into. Because remember, in our 401k, a portion of the money is not ours. We don't account for the fact that once it's time to withdraw, Uncle Sam wants his money. And if you live in California, not only do you owe Uncle Sam for federal taxes, you owe Uncle Sacramento, his brother, for state taxes.
Not Uncle Sacramento. Oh, my
Uncle
God.
Uncle Sacramento is coming to collect, honey.
That's hilarious. Okay. All right. I'm getting some okays and okays and okays. Okay. All right. So thank you for answering that for us. So parents are worried about the big, beautiful bill. That's Trump's thing, affecting their taxes. What should they do about the cap on, especially their itemized deductions for state and local taxes? Any advice, Queen?
So the state and local tax, cap is called SALT. The SALT cap. The SALT cap limits how much state and local tax you can deduct. And for families in high tax states like ours, that can hurt. Somebody asked me the other day, why do they call it the SALT cap? SALT stands for state and local tax, for those who don't know. And that SALT deduction cap for 2026, which is the tax year that we're in, is $40,400 for single filers, head of household, and married couples that are filing jointly, and then $20,200 for married couples that are filing separately. So what can I do about that? what you need to do is you need to check whether itemizing even it makes sense for you, because a lot of families are now benefiting more from just that standard deduction as opposed to sitting down and trying to itemize. Unless you own a business where you have lots of deductions that you can itemize, it may not even make sense to itemize. And then you want to start shifting your savings to tax advantage vehicles. I cannot stress more, as somebody who is a registered rep, a financial educator working in the financial industry, if you can't reduce taxes through your deductions, reduce them through strategy. Why do you think the rich get richer? They literally utilize the tax code to their advantage. And a lot of us don't necessarily know the tax codes, but you can sit with an advisor, you can sit with an educator, and they can show you, or I can show you where you can start shifting some of your money to those tax advantage plans. Again, Index Universal Life, Roth IRAs, HSA accounts, indexed annuities. All of those are tax advantage vehicles. And what tax advantage vehicles technically or generally will mean is you're able to withdraw your money tax free. So you want to start using those tax efficient investments, like those Roth accounts, like those structured index universal life plans. Those things will help you. And when it's all said and done, you got to recognize that the IRS rules, SALT rules, all those things are complex. So you really do need personalized guidance. You really do need to build yourself a financial team. You need a good tax preparer. I know a lot of us like to do our stuff online at home, you know, but if you can get yourself a good tax preparer, you need a financial professional who can sit down with you and help you map out a plan to understand your taxes and then figure out what you can and cannot deduct and if itemizing even makes sense for you. But the main thing is you need to know how your money works and how it's going to work for you. And yes, you need to factor in your taxes into that whole equation.
Here's another one more text. I'm sorry, they just keep popping up as if I didn't ask them a million times to give me all the questions.
That's okay.
Okay. Do you recommend opening up like a new Roth? I think that's what she's trying to say. Or how can you transfer into one without penalty? Does that question make sense?
So you can open up a new Roth by working with a financial professional or going online and, you know, and pulling up. I can't give an endorsement for a specific account, but you can like Google Roth accounts, right? Or you can always call me or text me or email me, and I can, based on your situation, give you some guidance on those accounts. And I also open those accounts. And then how can you open a new one and avoid penalties? So that depends on...
No. Not open a new one. Transfer something that you have, like transfer maybe a 401k, I think is what she's meaning, or something like that, into a Roth without penalty. Is that possible?
So,
or would
no,
you
if you're, if,
that?
Yeah. So if you're under the age of 59 and a half and you have money in what we call a qualified account, meaning you have not paid tax on it yet. So a qualified account would be like your 401k, your 403b at work, a 457 plan. You've paid no tax on that. When you decide that you want to shift it into a tax advantaged, a tax never account, you are going to have to first pay the tax on the first account. So you can avoid penalty potentially, but you will have to pay tax. You can't just roll from qualified to non-qualified without settling what you owe. Uncle Sam does not let you get out of his qualified tax plan technically without paying the tax on it. Now you can roll from a qualified, like a 401k is a qualified plan where it's tax deferred. You can roll it into another tax deferred account. You can do a traditional IRA. You can do an annuity, and you're still able to have some tax advantages in that new account, but maybe without as much stock market exposure. So yes, you can transfer, but you cannot transfer it to an account that you never pay tax on without first settling out Uncle Sam and the money you owe for the account you did not pay tax on. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, okay. Ma'am. That, thank you. So speaking of taxes, should parents pay taxes on their seed or on their harvest? And I think these are my parents just trying to, you know, show off that they know a little bit. So can you explain, explain and educate a little bit about what seed and harvest means? Because now they're just showing out.
Because they really are. They are showing out. And I love every minute of it because you know what that means, Coach Deidre? That means they listen to us every last Friday of the month. And they've been listening to us talk this talk and they are doing their research. So I love it. In a nutshell, seed versus harvest. Seed is the money you put in. Okay. Harvest is the money you take out later. And I always equate it to the analogy of a farm. I always tell people all the time, it's up to you, right? Do you want to be the person that is deciding that, hey, I'm gonna do my own thing and I'm gonna build a farm. I'm gonna start farming. I'm gonna be a farmer. And you take your seed, you get out, you go out, you buy all the seeds, you decide you're gonna do watermelon and potatoes and you're gonna grow beans and you're gonna grow apples and you're gonna grow peaches and you are out there working hard in the hot sun, sunny California. You found yourself a piece of land and you just out there sprinkling those seeds. And here comes Uncle Sam. He rides up on a track trailer and he says, this farm is shaping up. Coach D is looking nice. And you say, yeah, Uncle Sam, I know I owe you something. You want to take some of these seeds? You pull out a few packs of seeds and he's like, no, go ahead, keep going. And you say, well, I owe you something. How much do I owe you? Oh, don't even worry about it. Don't even worry about it. Just keep playing, keep doing your thing. I'll see you later. And he's gone. He don't come back for 3 summers. And 3 summers later, 5 summers later, you have a humongous, beautiful farm. I mean, your farm is popping and booming and you're selling fruit on the side of the road and people are pulling over and they like the cherries, the watermelon, the tomatoes, the potatoes. And here comes Uncle Sam on his tractor trailer. He's got another man behind him on a tractor trailer. And he says, I am here to collect. And I want the whole stuff. I want 1/3 of these watermelons. I want 1/3 of these apples. He tells his buddy, you get over there and you take a 10th. And you're like, well, hold on. Who is he? Remember, that's his brother, Uncle Sacramento. So he's taking his 1/3. Uncle Sacramento was taking his 1/10. And then you look up and you realize 40% of your farm has been wiped out. He did not want the seed. He wanted the harvest. He wanted the big money. He didn't want the seedlings. That wasn't enough for him. So he watched you grow it. And that's the analogy that I use with the 401k. You are not giving him anything on the $500 paycheck you earned. He don't want that. He wants you to invest it in the stock market and do all the work and let the market do what it's going to do. And then 30 years later, because you started at 30, but now here you are 60, and that $500 a month, $6,000 a year has turned into $333,000. And now here he comes, he wants his 30%, and his brother wants his 10%. And before you know it, 40% of your $330,000 is gone. 120 some odd thousand wiped out. And so you thought you had 333,000 to retire on, but now you've got 200,000 to retire on. And next week you are saying, welcome to Walmart. So it's up to you. Do you pay tax on the seed, the money you put in, or do you pay tax on the harvest? I would say this. Most people choose, harvest taxed accounts, 401k, traditional IRA. You get your tax break now, but you pay taxes later when your harvest is bigger. For me, I feel like I'm in my prime now. I'm in my 40s. I'm well capable of paying tax on the front end. What I don't want to do is be paying taxes on the back end when I'm in my 70s, when I'm in my 80s. I don't want to owe him anything at that time. So if you start looking into maybe a mixture of both, you can do some tax-free strategies that are going to let you pay taxes on the seed instead, again, that Roth IRA, that IUL, an HSA, insurance strategies, municipal bonds, college 529 savings plans. You're going to pay those taxes now on the front end, but your harvest, every piece of interest you get will grow tax free. So if you are raising kids, if you've already raised your kids, tax-free harvest means more money will stay in your pocket, more money will stay in your family, and not in taxes. Make Uncle Sam reinvest it and do the work himself. Let him go through the stock market and take some losses. You don't take all the losses and the gains and then have to give away all of the gains later.
I love that. That was perfect. I don't think you could have put that together any better way. You must teach it like that, because that just flows out of you like you have been standing that 10 toes down for a long time. I love that. Education, girl, fill us up with it. I love it. I love it. Can you explain some of the tax advantages that we can get through our insurance?
Life insurance is one of the most understood tax tools, or misunderstood tax tools. And let me tell you something, the wealthy love it. They love the fact that most of us don't know how to use the insurance tax advantages to our advantage. They love the fact that it's confusing to us, but it does not have to be that way. I tell people all the time, plans like Index Universal Life, IUL, you can look it up if you want more information, but here's what you can benefit from. One, you have a tax-free death benefit. So in the event of my demise, the money's going to go to my family completely tax-free. But what I also like is the fact that my cash value can grow without annual taxes, and then I can pull it out with tax-free access. So if you structure it properly, you can access cash value completely tax-free. You can do whatever you want with the money. Your 401k comes with age rules. On a 401k, you have to be 59 and a half to start pulling the money penalty-free. And so if you pull the money before age 59 and a half, you got to pay a 10% penalty. And then on top of the 10% penalty, you owe your federal and your state taxes. But with the IUL, I don't have to be 59 and a half to pull that money. And I'm not 59 and a half now. And I have used the money multiple times. And so I've been able to use the money tax-free and penalty-free. So in the 401k, if you're 59 and a half, you can do it penalty free, but you still will never get away with doing it, pulling out the money tax free. With my life insurance, I am pulling it out tax free and penalty free, no age restrictions. On your 401k, you have to do what's called an RMD. They require you to start taking your minimum withdrawal. You have to pull money, your minimum distribution. You have to pull it at 73. Let me tell you, 73 is like the new 50. Maybe I don't want you to tell me how much money I have to take every year when I'm 73. I want to decide how much money I'm taking. Well, in your IUL, there's no rule to how much you have to take and when. And then it comes with living benefits. Love the living benefits, because if I ever have a critical, chronic, or terminal illness, I don't have to worry about where my bill money is going to come from. A lot of people don't know, but just because you got cancer, just because you had a heart attack, just because you had a stroke, don't mean the rent ain't due next month or the mortgage ain't due next month. Just because you are sick does not mean that the water bill is not going to happen, or or your electricity bill, your PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, they come to collect every month. They want their money. Your cell phone, T-Mobile don't care that you're in the hospital, or Sprint don't care that you're in the hospital. You still have that cellular service bill. So what I love about these life insurance plans is that I am able to access large amounts of money. Okay. They give you lump sums, and they give you a cap on the lump sum, but you can take, up to that cap. So let's say you have a $500,000 life insurance plan. You can take up to $410,000, hypothetically speaking, to take care of yourself during a critical or chronic illness. I can tell you that both of my grandmothers had cancer. And I really feel like their illness was exacerbated because they didn't have the money. I think had they known that there was money there for treatment outside of what the doctor was willing to do in a standard way, you know, if they knew they could be at the Cancer Center Treatment of America, if they knew they could fly to Switzerland for whatever newest, hottest treatment was, maybe they would have done that. But you can't focus on that when you're focused on being sick and paying the bills. So those living benefits count. But even more importantly is knowing for me that I am legacy planning. I am protecting and creating generational wealth through my life insurance plan. I may never in my lifetime, I don't know, I may never have $2 million, $3 million to hand to my great grandkids that I don't have, by the way. I don't have grandkids or great grandkids, but I'm already planning for three, four, or five generations out. And I'm planning for that with life insurance. I can pay a couple hundred dollars a month, a couple thousand dollars a year, and I can guarantee that my great-grandchildren gonna have my picture on the wall. That's the only stipulation to receiving your check, is to put my picture on the wall.
Look, my daughter looking said, all noble and okay, a big portrait.
Listen, I'm telling you, when I was little, my grandmother had two people on the wall. She had Jesus and Martin Luther King. And I remember I used to say, I want my picture on the wall.
Okay.
So that's the stipulation to receive your inheritance, is that my noble picture must be on the wall. And you can point to it and say, my great grandmother left me this. So you can do all those things with life insurance.
I love that. Now, I know one of the concerns that some of our parents have, I think, is that their, you know, children are not necessarily getting married, but they are in long-term relationships and, you know, having children possibly with people, but just not necessarily, you know, just doing it the conventional way. So question, can I get joint life insurance with a partner, or do we have to be married?
No, you don't have to be married. A lot of carriers, depending on the insurance carrier, will allow joint policies. Some will call it just an additional insured. So you're able to take out the policy in maybe the person's name who maybe makes the most money. I don't know. Or let's just say it's me, but I add my husband as an additional insured. And so he would also have coverage. There are also plans like second to die plans where two spouses are on the plan. And then when both of them die, the money transfers to the beneficiaries, possibly the kids. So yeah, there are plenty of options for you both to be, on the same plan, or you can just get your individual policy for each partner and then just have a different policy number. Another thing that I want people to know is that your kids can be riders on your policy as well. So you can add your kids as a children's benefit rider. And what happens is the kids are also covered. So something happened, God forbid, something happens to your child, they would have that coverage. And then when they, just like with your health insurance, when they get a certain age, depending on the company, usually some companies 21, some companies 25, they will reach out to you and they will offer the child a chance to have their own policy for pennies, pretty much pennies on the dollar. So they'll branch off of your policy number and get their own policy, kind of like when with the health insurance, when they turn 26, the coverage ends. So it's just that way too with the child term rider. And trust me, a lot of people can't stand when that happens, because my daughter turned 26 and had to get her own health insurance this year. You would have thought it was the end of the world. So keep them on as long as you can. But yes, spouses, yes, children can share in a policy. And the main thing is just making sure that whomever it is, they have to have insurable interests with you. So if your lives are financially connected, then you can usually get coverage together.
And is it better to get insurance, joint insurance, or just have a will? Or both? Or would you need... You know what I mean? So then that way you can just say what needs to go where it needs to go And I don't, oh, I guess the life insurance and the will are just covering two different things. Is that
correct? Yeah, they're covering two different things because the life insurance is going to be the death benefit, right? So in the event of my demise, you can have multiple beneficiaries, by the way. So you could have, you know, 20% or going to the kids, 10% going to the kids or whatever. You have adult kids, you leave them with 10%. You might want to leave some to your sister. If you're, you know, you're close to your siblings. I have nieces and nephews that I want to leave money to. So I added them in there. But you can allow and determine how many beneficiaries. And let's say you have five beneficiaries and I'm maybe leaving 75% to my husband, but I'm leaving, you know, 12.5% to my daughters. And the reason I'm doing that is because I want the insurance company to hand over their money directly to them. I see a lot of people who make the mistake of saying, well, I'm going to leave it all to daughter number one because she's going to take care of everybody. That rarely happens. Daughter number one sees a check with her name on it, and then there is no will telling her this is how it should be dispersed. Technically, if the check is in her name, it's her check. So if you want to, you can leave a will with designated instructions on what you want to happen, but I often encourage people, name out your beneficiaries, their name, their date of birth, and where they're, so that they can collect their own money. Don't put the pressure on one person to divide up all your assets, including the money that's in their name. It's one thing if you say, Kendra, you're my daughter. I want you to, you know, I want you to give my couch to my sister Sally, and I want my TV to go to my brother John. That's easy. All I'm doing is saying, John and Sally, this is what, you know, this is what my mom instructed you to have. But do not put a whole check in my name, because then it becomes my check. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So don't
yes.
put a check in my name for $200,000 and then say, and now you give Sally $50,000 and you give Susie $25,000, because now you have me splitting up my money. I encourage people, if you want to leave behind money, have that dictated and spelled out. And if it's in insurance, then make them actual beneficiaries to receive their own money.
I like that. I didn't know that, some of that information that you gave. So that's good information. Thank you. Does it make sense to only have final expense insurance? And can you kind of explain just what that is a little bit too?
Yeah, final expense insurance is helpful, but the reality is final expense insurance is limited. What it is right there in the name, right? It's literally only designed to cover your very last expenses, your very last final expenses is designated to cover or designed to cover like your funeral costs. You have some small debts. You have some credit card debts, you know, some very small limited debts. And then you have end of life expenses. Somebody told me, I was talking to this lady and she was saying, well, I know I paid off all my bills. So I don't have any, I'm not going to have any final expenses. And I said, well, do you want a service? You want a funeral? I want a funeral, but outside of that, I'm not going to have any final expenses. And I go, well, how do you know that? She didn't account for the fact, what happened if you die at the hospital? You know, you were there for 3 weeks and then you die. That's a bill. And I don't know that you're, medical insurance is going to cover all of the time you were in the hospital. What if you fell out in the store and then you had to get a ride by ambulance to the hospital? That's a bill. So all of those things equate to your end of life expenses, right? You want a flower in the casket? I remember when my grandfather died, they charged, I was brand new to death as an adult. You know, I was just entering adulthood, and it's really one of the reasons why I got into this business, because I didn't know how anything worked. And so I was at the mortuary just picking out stuff. I was like, oh, this is nice. I was in the mortuary just shopping. I was like, and they were just right there with a calculator, just calculating everything. And I was like, oh, this is silk. Oh, it was silk lining in the casket. Oh, you know, and I was going on and on and on. And they just followed me around. They showed me around. Let me pick out all these beautiful. Would you like a blue casket? Would you like a? And I was going, oh, this is nice. This is, when I got done, that bill was so high. And I was like, well, wait now, how much did you charge for the silk lining? And I mean, when I got down to the nitty gritty, I was taking stuff off the tab. Like, wait a minute, hold on. Let's, what comes standard with, you know, what comes standard with the package? And they were like, nothing. Nothing comes standard. There is no standard package. What do you mean? We picked them up. We brought them here. You know, we had to put them over there. So, had we had a final expense plan, we could have turned over that final expense plan, and then that final expense insurance plan, they would have been able to deal directly with the insurance provider at the mortuary. So it's really designed for those things, just to like figure out how you want the services and what you want to happen there. It is not designed in the same manner that life insurance, full life insurance, is designed to replace more than just your end of life expenses. Regular life insurance, a term, a whole, and index universal life insurance is designed to replace income. It's designed to build wealth. If you have minor kids, it's designed to protect your kids' future. I tell families all the time, the way we determine how much coverage you need is we use the dime method. You got to look at your debt. Your debt doesn't die because you died. So you want to make sure that in your regular life insurance policy, you have enough to cover your debt when you pass away. So if, whatever your debt is today, that's how much debt coverage you need. You need enough to cover your income replacement. If you have little people or depending on you, then you need to make sure that you have your income times 10 years of your income. Because if you've got a 5-year-old, guess what? 10 years from now, they're 15. So you, or you got a 10-year-old, 10 years from now, they're 20. They're probably still living at your house. So you got to have your income able to be replaced. If you've got a spouse that you pay half the rent or half the utilities, or you've got to replace your income. So you want to make sure also, if you have a mortgage, wouldn't it be nice if your spouse or whomever or your children can pay off your mortgage in the event of your demise? Education. Do you have young people that you want to send to college? What if you die before they go to college? How are they going to go to college? So your debt, your income, your mortgage, and your education all need to be factored into how much coverage you need. And more than likely, final expense alone is not going to do it. Most final expense plans are going to run you or give you anywhere from 1,000 up to about 50,000 in coverage. And most aren't even 50,000. Most people get between 1,000 and 25,000 in coverage. So if you know that 25 to 50,000 is not going to cover the debt, not going to cover the income, not going to cover the mortgage balance, not going to cover the cost of the education you want to have for your kids, then no, final expense is not enough. It could be supplemental, but it and that's what it is. It's a supplement. It's not a full plan.
What age should you get a final expense insurance plan? Would you recommend?
I think you can get it at any age. I don't know that age is a factor, but I will say this: final expense plans cost more on a rate per thousand, because all insurance is based on $1,000 worth of coverage. How much does it cost for you to get 1,000, 10,000, 5,000? So although final expense plans sound cheaper, it's because you're getting less coverage, but on a rate per thousand, they cost more. So if you are young and vibrant and healthy, why pay more? You might as well get a plan that is going to either just be for a term, a small amount of time, or you get a plan like the Index Universal Life or Whole Life that's going to build you some cash value. Generally, for final expense, my clients who have final expense are usually older. When I say older, 70 plus, or if they are younger, they have some health issues that would not allow them to have a traditional plan. Because one of the great things about the final expense plan is they often don't require underwriting. So you can have health ailments, you can have medical issues, and still oftentimes are able to get covered in a final expense plan. But if you're young and healthy, you're 57, you're 58, you're 45, you're 35, and you have an insurance need more than $25,000 in coverage, then go with the traditional plan because it's going to cost you more. And yes, the commercials you see on TV are real. I just want to put that out there because people always ask me, are those commercials real? You see all these commercials where they go for just $9.95. You too can get covered. And the answer is yes, you too can get covered. But oftentimes you too can get covered for $9.99 with $1,000 of insurance. Mm-hmm. It's not, gotcha. You're not paying $9.95 for $50,000 or $100,000. It's generally $9.95 per $1,000 in coverage.
Got you. And, you know, and I was thinking about final expenses as you were talking because, you know, even things like PG&E, you know what I mean? And, you know, probably maybe moving and moving your stuff out and all those things. Could those also be covered in that? Because they are still going to be bills. You know, you still have to notify and pay the month just because you passed away. You still got to pay your bills or do you not?
You still got to pay all your bills. Oh, so, okay. Yeah. So the final expense plan, no matter what type of insurance plan it is, the money's going to come to your beneficiaries.
But does it have to be spent, you know, put on there what to pay or it, you know what I mean?
No. Like, okay. No, they're just going to get it. They're going to get the same. The beneficiary is going to get the same check. Now, generally with a regular whole life, term life, index universal life, or a final expense plan, most funeral homes and mortuaries will take proof of insurance. And then they just put a lien, right? They kind of like a lien. They just put a lien on the amount that they've charge you for services. So they may do the whole service, the whole funeral, the whole everything without you paying a nickel out of your pocket because you have that final expense certificate or that regular life insurance policy. You may be able, your family members may be able to just take that as proof. Here's proof that she is covered and they'll do the whole service, but they have like a lien attached to that insurance plan. So they're paid first before the beneficiaries. But everything else would go to the beneficiaries.
Got you. Okay. Mm-hmm. When thinking about our safety for their money, do people want growth or safety? Again, another question showing off. So you may have to explain a little bit about what they're talking about when it comes to growth or safety for those who aren't quite as educated now as my parents are.
Okay, so most people want both, right? And so that becomes a challenge because I meet with clients all the time and everybody wants the best of both worlds. Growth is what's going to help you beat inflation, right? You want to, if I put in $1,000, I would love for that $1,000 to grow and turn into $10,000. That's growth. The money you put in gets bigger. But safety is going to protect you from market downturns. So the money you put in is never lost. If you are putting your money into a 401k or a traditional IRA, or, you day trade and you buy stocks and ETFs every day and, you know, you buy the unit investment trust or you buy variable annuities, your money may grow. And it might beat inflation because now you have total market exposure. So you may get 30 or 40% on the $1,000 you put in, but it's not safe. Safety is what's going to make sure that you never lose your money. So now you've walked that fine line because stock market plans are not safe. There's just no, if your money is in the stock market, I'm here to tell you, it is not safe. You have full stock market exposure. So this is why a lot of families try, when I sit with families, we look at balance strategies. Because if you want a whole lot of interest, you may have to take a little bit of market risk. Or you go with those zero loss products. Again, you go with a plan like index account, an index annuity, an index universal life. You can put your money in these products and solutions where they guarantee you no loss. But then on top of that, you're going to get that market length growth. You're going to have that downside protection, but generally your growth is going to be capped. So if you're looking for growth because you want that money to get bigger, and you're looking for safety where you don't want your money direct to the stock market, then I would advise you to look at index plans. If you're willing to trade one for the other, then you have the option of doing, just total stock market type plans or just total index plans. We all want our money to grow, but at the end of the day, I always tell my clients, I still want to sleep at night. So I don't want my money to grow so bad that I'm willing to lose it all. I don't know about you. I can't afford to lose it all. So because I know I can't afford to lose it all, the majority of what I do are in those zero loss protecting products. No loss guarantees.
Love that. Now, I know you normally are doing some classes. We got time definitely to make sure that we put out there what classes you have that are available, how you are helping people, and you can do it right there in your own home, virtual classes that you put out there. Can you give us a little bit of information about that before we get out of here, Queen?
Absolutely. So every day, Monday through Friday, my team and I offer free financial literacy workshops on Zoom, 11 a.m., 5 p.m., and 7 p.m. We have alternating instructors. My next time being an actual instructor, we'll be doing a workshop on annuities, and that will be on what day? We have a workshop on annuities Monday, the 7th of September. So annuities and IULs, Monday, September 7th. We'll be doing that at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thursday the 10th at 11 a.m., I will be teaching a workshop that really explains asset accumulation. And then I have a lot coming up in November. I'm working with a women's group, and we'll be doing it's called the Noir Wellness Exchange, and we'll be working on all kinds of things, including the six pillars of health. We'll be working on understanding money and building your future. So you can find me at info@KendraLWillis@gmail.com, or you can find me across all social media platforms as Kendra Knows Best. And you can always find me wherever you find Coach Deidre in her website. I am there as well. And Coach Deidre and I, we're going to have some stuff coming up for y'all too before the end of the year. So we're going to manifest it.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. All right. Before we go and enjoy this wonderful, wonderful weekend, Queen, what words of advice can you give parents as we leave? What's some good things? Break it down to us.
Look, at the end of the day, it boils down to this. Parenting is expensive. It's unpredictable, but it's also beautiful. You know, me and Coach Deidre, we've both done it. We raised beautiful, well-rounded kids. But the reality is also that if you're going to be raising those beautiful, well-rounded kids, you need your money to reflect that. You want to start teaching your kids good money habits, and good money habits starts with you. You have a duty and a due diligence to protect your family. You have a duty and a due diligence to grow your wealth. And don't wait for the perfect time. The perfect time is whenever you decide that you and your family deserve better. So it's up to you. I tell you guys all the time, if it's meant to be, it's up to me. Nobody's going to care more about your finances than you are. So it's time to take control, time to take action. And you guys can find me. I am here to help. I do not charge anything for my services. My goal is to educate the masses and make sure that no family is left behind. So if you ever want some help, I am here. You can find me on all social media platforms as Kendra Knows Best. Reach out, and I'd be more than happy to offer you a complimentary consultation to help you get on track and build that strong financial foundation. Thank you for having me, Coach D.
All right. See you next time, Queen.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. So It's easy to forget that a changing economy changes the mood inside a family as much as it changes individuals. An economic downturn may feel beyond our control, but its impact changes how children and parents interact, making it difficult to feel supportive at a time of increasing financial uncertainty and stress. So instead of seeing financial setbacks as roadblocks, parents now are viewing them as learning experiences as they remain open to new financial approaches and strategies. And with this crazy president, he's robbing the country blind. He's getting rich. We are not. So we have to be mindful and avoid impulsive financial behaviors and think more clearly about the long-term consequences of our actions. So we got to keep on sticking to your budgets. We got to keep on establishing those firm limits on our spending. And we have to make sure we're not overspending on things that just don't need or can't afford anymore. And while you do that, don't forget to continue to focus on the present moment and appreciate what you have till times get better, because they always do get better. So I guess that wraps it up for me today. Thanks for tuning in and listening. We can stay connected on my social media outlets, my Facebook page, If Nothing Changes, Nothing Changes Life Coaching, my Instagram page, at Coach Deidre, and past podcasts can be heard on CoachDeidre.com. So I'll be back with a new show Friday, September 4th at noon on the one and only Inner Light Radio. I hope you'll tune in again. Until then, I hope you'll be doing more than paying bills and waiting to die. Go live. This is Deidre, your life coach, reminding you, if you want to make a change in your life, do it. Because if nothing changes, nothing changes.